And we are live on Facebook on Augusta Free Press. I'm Chris Graham. This is Street Knowledge. It's Wednesday, and we've got, as we normally do on Wednesdays, Rod Mullins joining us here today. We're going to talk NASCAR news and notes. Of course, we're in the middle of the playoff chase, getting down. We're getting closer and closer to that Final Four. And Rod, let's talk about what happened this past weekend in Kansas with, big race, obviously the first race of this stage of the playoffs. And a big win for Joey Logano as he will advance to the championship round. And now we've got to figure out the rest. But what a big day for him and for other racers jockeying for position for that final spot.
No other way to say it. It was a big day for Joey Logano, a big win for him. But, I tuned in and watched the race, and I saw a football game is what I saw towards the last 5 or 10 laps of this race. And when I say a football game, you had Kevin Harvick, and then you had Joey Logano, and Joey Logano was throwing blocks all over the place on Kevin Harvick. And then I think we saw a downside to this setup that NASCAR takes with them to Kansas. Some of these cars just couldn't get the horsepower, just couldn't get the momentum that they needed to stay out there in front, unlike the Penske Fords and Joey Logano this time around. And so I think it made a difference. I think it was one of those things that Joey Logano had been looking for a win. He'd been hungry for a win. More than anything else, afterwards, he says, you got to want something like this. And that's what he did. He went out, he wanted that race, and he hung in there to the very end, and he kept Kevin Harvick from advancing. But, there for a while, we thought Chase Elliott was going to have a chance at maybe winning this race. And Chase Elliott had some problems on restarts, especially. And then some problems with the radio communications that kind of threw them off for the rest of the race. And so, is he still in it? Yes. You look at these drivers, they still have a chance between, of course, Texas, and then they've got, of course, Martinsville coming up after that. But, now's the time. Pressure time is starting to build up even more, and the pressure is building up, especially by the time that they get to Texas and get ready for this big race this weekend, because they're going to decide another spot. They could decide another spot, at least by the time they get to Martinsville, and one more fill-in spot, and that decides the final four going into Phoenix. So it's these are the next big two races, I think, that they've got on the schedule. It's going to decide who's going to possibly make that final four.
Kevin Harvick finished second. He's won 9 races this year. Denny Hamlin also with a lot of wins this year. But at this stage, it's pretty much, not quite, because there is one spot for a non-winner, but essentially with 3 races before that final round, assuming there's a different winner each time, that's three of the 4 spots there. A lot of pressure now on the guys who've been dominating all season long to fight their way into Phoenix.
Well, I saw a funny meme today that was on Facebook, and someone had asked the question, if you had Dale Earnhardt, who won 7 championships, and Richard Petty, who had won 7 championships. Of course, we kind of know where Jimmy Johnson's at in this. But if you had those two right now in the playoff picture with maybe the way that they used to be in their better seasons, would either one of them make a championship or be able to win the championship, or would they even make it down to the final, the final race of the season to even make it there? And that left me pondering about some things, Is the situation the same? Are they different from what they used to be? Of course, I think the racing is much different from what it used to be in Earnhardt's time and also in Richard Petty's time. But, yeah, it was a legitimate question, and it makes you really start wondering, could these guys possibly, stage a chance for, a win out of this? And I even throw a David Pearson into this. I might even throw a Cale Yarborough into it, a Darrell Waltrip. Man, you talk about mixing it up. That would be a really interesting scenario going down in these final 3 or 4 races.
Yeah, I've wondered about that too over the years, both directions. Whether you look at the in past years, some years you had a guy who had been so dominant early season that they could kind of coast a little bit down the stretch, mm-hmm. just make sure they finish the race and finish in the top 10 and not necessarily press too hard to risk not finishing and losing points. On the other hand, I wonder, in today's era, what we see, if how things will be different this year, for example. It is an interesting philosophical question. There's no doubt pressure on these guys now that wouldn't be there. If you're Harvick and Hamlin, you've been dominant all season. It would be those two guys at this stage if we were in a you know, pre-playoff environment. They'd be fighting it out, and everybody else would be sort of just, you know, jockeying for third place. So that's interesting that you bring that up, that, you know, we have to think about that.
I would like to see, you know, and I'd like to see, too, an Alan Kulwicki plugged into this equation also. Alan Kulwicki didn't win a whole lot of races the year that he won the NASCAR championship, but he won when it counted, but he mostly stayed in contention in these races, and he was a one-car team. He was a single-funded team, and that, you know, presents a little bit of a different scenario from, well, you look at Petty. Petty would have been a one-car team at one point, although they did field some different cars at different points throughout the years. You had Darrell Waltrip also when he was running for either Rick Hendrick. He was running there maybe one or two cars they had at a team, but when he was running for Junior Johnson, it was a one-car team at that point for him. And then you had, Dale Earnhardt. Dale Earnhardt was a single-car team up until about, I'd say, the early 90s or maybe about the mid-90s when they brought Mike Skinner along with the Lowe's car at that point. So these are all interesting scenarios of how these teams would have been able to really get out there on the track and how they would have performed today. But very interesting question. You know, I think it's a toss-up. I think it's a toss-up given today's standards. You know, if you put them in the cars from yesterday, it would be a much different situation comparing them up with the drivers of today. It'd be like comparing apples and oranges. But if they were in all equally prepared cars, sort of similar to what each one of the drivers was used to maybe back in the old days, oh, man, we could have a very serious fight for the championship, much like what we're having today. And on the last note I bring up on this, you know, Rusty Wallace was one of these people that brought up a long time ago. He said, you know, if you're going to win a championship, you need to base it on winning races. It's not a matter of whether or not how many times you finish second or how many times you finish third, but that does have to have some bearing on it. If you do win a few races out of it, you've got to be there toward the very end of the season to be able to be in contention. Unlike what you said, coasting into it, so to speak. And some drivers used to, that's what they did. And that's the reason why NASCAR made it, tried to make it a little bit more exciting.
And it's definitely working. You got to win at this. You got to win consistently all year long to get in the playoffs, to get through the playoffs and get to that final race. So we talked about Joe Logano punching his ticket for the final four, at Phoenix. Has anybody already put themselves onto the heap of win or done? You know, we're only one race into this three stages, this three race stage, but is anybody already in that position?
I've not really heard if anybody's in that position. I think from my perspective, looking at it, I think all of these guys that have finished in this final eight that came down to this, these are the guys that are probably – they're not going around and telling everybody that they're under pressure to win right now, but you know that the feeling is there. Denny Hamlin's going to have to prove something. Denny Hamlin is in, regardless. He's into this this next round, or he made it into this last round, but he's still got to make himself into this next round coming up as they move on into Martinsville after the Texas race. You know, he's got to be in contention. Chase Elliott, for him, it's all or nothing right now at this point. He's kind of downplaying it a little bit and saying, you know, we've got to practice and we've got to have make better decisions and not make as many mistakes coming down this stretch. So you've got those. You've got Joey Logano, of course, and he's locked in. But then you've got some of these other drivers that are still floating around that top eight. Alex Bowman's at one, for example. He could go to Texas and he could really pull out a win with this one. And that would make him a shoe-in, of course, for the Final Four. And that would be a great feather in the hat for that young man at Hendrick Motorsports. So I think there's a lot more of these guys that's putting pressure on themselves internally than what we're seeing, or at least what we're hearing about out there from the race car teams and some of the team owners. I think they know what's on the line, and they know that it's time for their driver to either put up or shut up when it comes time to race.
Okay, so we'll talk about Texas, the next race in our playoff scenario, a little later in the show. But let's go off the track for a bit. First, I just wanted to update a story. We've been talking about Kyle Larson off and on the last few months. News with Kyle Larson.
Well, he got reinstated. NASCAR has reinstated him. He's met all the requirements for the, as I call it, the sensitivity training and so forth with the deal over the racial slur that he used back in one of the iRacing events back early on during this COVID pandemic. And he's been interviewed. I know that he was interviewed on CBS this morning here just a couple of days ago. And he says he's made a change. He was telling James Brown, he said, you know, that it took a situation like this to kind of present it to him. And he said, I'd never used that word before. And I think it was one of those things in passing that he may have just thought he was being maybe cool, one of the guys or something, when he said that. And they may have said that before with each other. But when it was on that huge of a stage with that eye racing, everybody was listening. And I think it really stood out on him. Now, where does he go? Well, we've already had some news this past week of what's going to be happening. I really don't know if he's going to be materializing over at Stewart Haas Racing, because the announcement was made that Chase Briscoe was going to move up into the 14 car to replace Clint Bowyer. So those slots are full now over at Stewart Haas. So Tony Stewart will not be getting him back, or at least getting him in a Ford for next year for 2021. So where does that leave him at? Well, the only other possibility that a lot of people are talking about right now is it's going to be that 88 car that Alex Bowman's going to be giving up to move to the 48 car to take over Jimmy Johnson's ride. That's probably the only option he's got right now at this point. And Rick Hendrick has a way of taking drivers who have been down on their luck, or have at least had something happen to them, or is at least struggling to try to make ends meet or try to make it in the sport. And I give that example because I think of Tim Richmond. Tim Richmond was one of these guys, much like Tom Cruise in the movie, where he just said, you know, I can race anything. It's got a wheel on it. It's got a steering wheel. And that's what Tim Richmond did. And Rick Hendrick gave him that opportunity. So when I look at this, I really think that Kyle Larson probably will materialize over at Hendrick Motorsports. And I think it would be a plus for him. I think it'd be a plus for the race team. It'll bring a very youthful, young stable of drivers that they've got over at Hendrick Motorsports. And it'll push them into the forefront, I think, even more now that you've got Dale Earnhardt Jr. that's already out. And then, of course, Jimmy Johnson, who's retiring at the end of the season.
Hey, you mentioned Chase Briscoe and Stewart Haas. What more is there there? Was that something that had been in the works for a while?
Yeah, this had been in the works for a while. And I think it's been sort of like the Matt DiBenedetto set up, so to speak, of he's been racing on the Xfinity Series in the circuit just to be able to race and get a seat. That's what he was doing. And he's proven that. No doubt about it, in the Xfinity Series, he's been dominant this season. He has just done a tremendous job. And Tony Stewart just went ahead and rewarded him on with the number 14 car, replacing Clint Bowyer, who is moving to the broadcast booth next season with Fox.
One other bit of off-the-track news, Eric Jones has a ride. Talk about that.
Yeah. Well, that was the one that I had kept on kind of secretly hoping and predicting in the back of my mind that this was going to happen. You had Eric Jones, who really is out there. He's young, 24 years old as a driver. And he's been jilted, so to speak, by Joe Gibbs Racing. And, I mean, he's done a great job for Joe Gibbs Racing. I'm not going to dispute that. But the way things are at Joe Gibbs Racing, it's either lead or follow or get out of the way altogether. And Jones was doing a little bit more of the following, more so than he was leading. And he's definitely proven to a lot of people in the sport that he can contend and hang in there. With some of the races he's had, even after the announcement he was leaving Joe Gibbs, you know, people were wondering, where was he going to show up? And I kind of had in the back of my mind this thought, what if he goes to Richard Petty? It would be a nice little ride for him. I mean, they can mature. It's sort of like where the thing, at least with Bubba Wallace, when the stop button and maybe pause button was put on for all this stuff that happened with Bubba Wallace and the race issue and so forth. And then the announcement of the Michael Jordan and Denny Hamlin team. Now he's going to be moving to that team. And I think this kind of is a resume spot for Eric Jones. He'll walk into this team. And here's another good thing too. They already have a crew chief in place, Jerry Baxter, who was Bubba Wallace's crew chief. And both of them know each other already. Eric Jones was driving for Jerry Baxter when he was driving trucks for Kyle Busch in the truck series. So they already know each other. I think if they get a little bit stronger alliance with Chevrolet and maybe the Childress Hendrick thing that they came up with about engines and so forth this past year, they're working a little bit more closely on engine production and so forth for this new car of tomorrow that'll be coming out in 2021. I think it could be good things for Erik Jones coming up in 2021.
So back to our playoff push, two more races to go before we narrow our field of championship contenders to four for Phoenix in the finale. Texas this weekend. What do you look for this weekend going into that race?
Well, Texas is like a Charlotte racetrack. We can just go ahead and tell you again, I use that term a lot, of the cookie cutter track. It is very much like Charlotte. It's going to be difficult. There are things of where I know that some of the drivers have had very good luck at Texas before. And then there is a part on the Texas track that gives them it gives them fits. And I'm trying to remember which turn it is, or at least what part of that racetrack. And I think it's on that backstretch, especially toward turn three, as they start making it around the track. They've run into trouble there before. They've had trouble with weeping from the track. Water came up from the track in the first few years that they had it there. It doesn't sit well sometimes. There's kind of an unevenness about the track. And I know that they do a great job of keeping that track going out there, but it's just one of those obstacles that you have to overcome when you're racing, especially in a Texas or a Charlotte or an Atlanta. So that kind of gives you an idea of what kind of track they're going to be looking for. It's going to be rough on tires. It's going to be the chassis setup has to be almost exactly the way that they need. It's going to be different from the first time when they raced Texas. It's going to be a completely different setup. We don't know what the weather will be by the time that Texas rolls around. So by the time that the weekend, it'll be late in the afternoon. You know, those tires, hey, we had a big difference this past weekend in the race with this last one, because temperatures were only in the 40s in Kansas, and these were cold tires that they had to go and they had to go out and work on. And you had several of them that had some tire issues and brushed the wall because the pressurization wasn't the best in these tires. So this could be a very interesting race this coming weekend at Texas. And who comes out of it? Anybody's guess right now at this point.
Two to go before we narrow our field down, and we feel like we're ready. Rod, as always, thank you for your time and expertise.
Appreciate it, Chris. Thank you.